The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, is here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site. So, David, first up, we have the last of the news from the AAAS meeting, a story on global fisheries.
Right, Sarah. This story came out actually towards the end of the meeting, and it's about the agreements that some countries make with other countries to fish their waters. And the idea is that as global demand for seafood continues to rise, fishing fleets have to travel farther and farther to bring home a catch. And some countries have to travel so far, they're actually in other countries' waters and they have to broker deals that allow them to fish these waters. Well, what this new study says is that a lot of these countries are, for lack of a better word, sort of getting hosed by these agreements. This particular study focused on an agreement between the European Union and Madagascar. Scientists found that although Madagascar thought that it was giving away a certain amount of fish to the EU by allowing it to fish in certain waters with its big fishing fleets, turns out that Madagascar wasn't taking into account smaller scale fishing operations and recreational activities that the EU was also engaging in their waters. And therefore, the final fishery catches that the EU was actually bringing home could have been up to six times higher than the commercial catch numbers that Madagascar was counting on.
And where was Madagascar getting those numbers?
The numbers actually come from the United Nations, which have numbers on how much fishing fleets around the world catch. And again, that's what Madagascar was basing it on. It wasn't taking into account these smaller scale activities. So they're actually losing a lot more fish from their water than they think they are, and they're not getting compensated for it.
And there's another catch here to this fishing story.
Right.
Inflation is also playing a part.
Inflation is also hurting countries like Madagascar. The team found that even though the EU was paying more year after year for rights to fish in Madagascar's water, in 1986, for example, the EU was paying 1.1 million euros and paying 1.7 million euros in 2010, there was actually an inflation rate of 12%. So actually in the long run, Madagascar was also losing money on that deal.
Maybe this study will have an impact on how the UN counts the fish.
Exactly.
Next up, we have a story on thieving elephants in Kenya.
Right, from fish to elephants. This next story is all about whether male elephants make bad role models. And the study has to do with a group of elephants that live outside Amboseli National Park, which is just north of Mount Kilimanjaro in Kenya. And what happens in this area is locals often wake up to find that their carefully sown tomatoes and onions have been pulled up and their fields mangled. And the evidence left behind is a few tracks and, for lack of a better word, some elephant poop. And so they know the elephants are causing the damage. What they don't know is why they're doing it.
So how do they figure out why an elephant was eating crops? I mean, it does seem like a buffet for
right.
an elephant, right?
Well, it's a really good question. The thing is that elephants have plenty of other food opportunities. So it doesn't really make sense for them to go after crops, especially since farmers can get angry, and the elephants certainly don't want that. What the researchers figured out is that older male elephants go through a period called must, which is basically a prolonged period of heightened testosterone and aggression levels, which male elephants begin when they reach their full reproductive potential, which is around 45 or 50 years old. Elephants actually live pretty long. But males entering must don't just go around looking for mates like you'd expect. They actually go on rampages. And when they go on these rampages, they actually use up a lot of their energy. So when it comes time to finding food, raiding a farmer's crops is actually a lot less energy than going out and finding your food out there in the wild.
So they are visiting the buffet.
They are visiting the buffet, but what's most interesting, the researchers found, is that a lot of younger elephants are doing this as well, elephants that are not going through must. So the question is, why are they doing it? And it turns out that younger elephants were sort of looking up to the older males as role models. The youngsters tended to run in packs with the older bulls, as they're called, and they were actually learning these behaviors from them. And researchers have seen this in female elephants, too. Female elephants will often teach their young where to find watering holes. So it's clear that in elephant society, the younger elephants learn from the older ones. But in this case, the younger elephants are actually learning bad manners from the older ones.
So what can farmers do to break the cycle of violence and thievery?
Well, what the researchers say is that the farmers should put up more of a fuss than they are currently, especially when the older male elephants come around. And if the older male elephants really begin to associate raiding these crops with being shouted at, being shot at, whatever it is, they're probably less likely to do it and therefore less likely to pass these bad behaviors on to younger males.
Okay. Well, last up, we have more exoplanet news. Some planets are alien invaders.
Right, Sarah. Well, this story is all about the idea that suns can capture wandering worlds out there in the universe. We tend to think that solar systems sort of form as they are. A bunch of planets form from what's called a protoplanetary disk that surrounds a sun, and that's all you have. But there's a lot of unexplained planets out there. When astronomers have been looking through space, they found that there are planets that are orbiting very far from their home suns, much farther out than actually Pluto even orbits from our own sun. And the question is, did those planets really form there, or were they somehow captured by the sun's gravity and dragged into the solar system from empty space?
So what's the new evidence that this might be going on?
It's actually known that there's a lot of free-floating planets out there. In fact, we recently ran a story that suggested that free-floating planets may be as abundant as stars in the universe. So there's a lot of them out there. What this team of researchers did was they ran some computer simulations, and they found that if that's indeed the case, if the number of free-floating planets equals the number of stars, then 3% to 6% of the stars will succeed in capturing a planet. And some stars could capture as many as two or three planets. Now, most of these captured planets end up hundreds of thousands of times farther from the sun than Earth is from our sun. So these guys are really orbiting way far out there, but they're still part of the solar system because they're still orbiting the sun.
So is there any chance that our solar system could have one of these extremely distant planets?
Well, that's the billion-dollar question. Is there a planet out there beyond Pluto? And some astronomers have suggested that there is. We haven't seen it yet, and we don't know if it's there, but this new study suggests that it could be there.
Wow. Well, maybe we'll be writing about that next year.
Right.
So what else is on the news site this week?
Well, Sarah, for Science Now, we've got a story about a virus that uses an iron spike to invade bacterial cells. Also a story about a type of fish that blows jets of water at its prey. For Science Insider, we've got a story about how the faster-than-light neutrinos, quote-unquote, that created quite a controversy a few months back may not be so faster than light after all. We're also continuing our coverage of the H5N1 controversial flu papers. What's the latest in terms of the controversy surrounding their publication? Finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's Science Live is about the future of fusion research in the United States. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Sarah.
David Grimm is the online news editor for Science. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.